Hey guys, welcome to the Lunge and Lift podcast. Today we're going to give you our top four trends that need to die. These are a list of things that have ground our gears over the last little while. Not too serious, but I think there are some useful takeaways from the discussions we have around them. So we're going to talk about spinal flexion, rebuilds, cardio reels, and calorie punishments. But before we get into the details of all of that, as always, a big thank you to our show sponsors. Don't forget to click the link in the description box below to get your 7-day free trial to Rob's Strength Formula Program, which is your answer to the strength and muscle building equation. Also, a big thank you to thetrainingstimulus.com. If you are a functional fitness coach or practitioner, please check out the website to get your free guide to movement mechanics. And finally, a big thank you to zagsupplements.com, our favorite daily supplement. Please use our discount code DISCLIFT20, DISCLIFT20, to get 20% off your trial pack of a supplement that has our concentration and focus dialed in for work and also has us feeling great for training. All right, Rob, let's get into it.
Yeah, mate. I mean, these are not an exhaustive list. That's the right word? Yeah, exhaustive list, because we're getting old here and loads of things grind our gears, as we just realised. But we wanted to kind of keep it to maybe like the top four that we kind of see as a frequent thing, especially on social media. Because obviously social media has its pluses and its negatives. And I think because a lot of the time the algorithms favor like polarized opinions on things, that things kind of get thrown in your face continually. And if you're not saying a polarized opinion, you kind of just get washed out and forgotten about. So that's why we're moaning about it. But
I mean, you put the nail on the head there, mate.
Yeah, I think like the first one for me is the, like, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but spinal flexion. Now, that is obviously where our spine is essentially rounding. Now, for me, I've had some massive, massive strength gains from flexing my spine. The moment I allowed my shoulders to sit forward and let my spine go how it naturally goes in my deadlift, unlocked a lot of weight on the deadlift for me. So I'm a massive proponent of spinal flexion in general, because I've seen personally the benefits of it. But at the same time, I still think there's a place for more of a neutral spine, the traditional flat back position. And I think because there is so much benefit to spinal flexion, we're forgetting about the positives of a flat back. And this is where I think, again, social media, it dramatizes a lot of these things. But I think where the nuance comes is where we understand the time and the place for both and when you might want to utilize them. I know what your thoughts are in general, but like, let's dive a little bit more into your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, mate. I think the lack of nuance and the favoritism towards controversial or dogmatic posts where it's a more extreme point of view, because that obviously grabs attention more than a very subtle point that might be more accurate and, yeah, like you say, nuanced. And I think because it's basically optimizing for contrarianism. It's anything that is against the current school of thought or the traditional school of thought tends to blow up. And what that has led to is an environment on social media where everyone's playing that game. Everyone's just trying to be contrarian. Everyone's trying to say something extreme or surprising or against what you tend to think, and usually in quite an attacking manner. Like, there's a lot of posts now which are, this guy's a fucking idiot, listen to what he's saying, he's so wrong, I'm so right. And this spinal flexion one is a good example because it's very popular at the moment, and there's a lot of truth in it, in that our spines are meant to flex. We've said it in loads of podcasts from years back now that you are stronger when you flex your spine in a deadlift, because there's more joints moving, there's more muscle involved, so you can lift more. And that's why everyone rounds their back when they are close to failure, maxing out. But what that doesn't mean is that there's never a case to do anything different. We shouldn't always be flexing our spine. And we're talking about it before we started recording. depending on your intended training stimulus, there might be a very strong business case not to flex your spine, to be neutral or even slightly extended when you're looking at movements like Romanian deadlifts or good mornings. If you're trying to put the workload more into your hamstrings, a lot of people won't be able to get the hamstrings to feel that tension if they let their back round. So again, there's just nuance and caveats around spinal flexion being good all the time for everyone, for every in every situation, for every goal. And yeah, I think, yeah, I'll let you talk for a bit now. I feel like I've just been ranting for a bit too long.
No, I think it's really hard because it's like we both see the value in the positive talk around spinal flexion, and it's such it's a good school of thought, because it's like, especially where I dabbled in the world of old time strength, and I will be going back that way. And like when I look back at some of those lifts, like none of them were really talking about necessarily having this flat back or anything. It was basically just pick this up any way you can and get it, say, overhead, most likely with one hand. Yeah. And there wasn't a talk of how your spine needed to be. And it was then, I guess, once like the old time strength kind of started to fall out of favor and more like the bodybuilding style of position, where you do want to get more isolation into certain muscles and you're not necessarily trying to do big compound movements with odd objects, the flat back, probably, this is, I do not know, but I would reckon that would be the sort of time, because when the use of machines become more of a thing, the use of dumbbells become more of a thing to achieve muscle hypertrophy. And it's like, because when we was talking pre recording and we talk about like an Atlas stone versus say a back squat, and it's like, when you think about an Atlas stone, so if you don't know what an Atlas stone is, just imagine a big ball normally made of concrete, a rock, just as like an Atlas stone. Like when you look in, like say strongman, normally it's like this big sphere of just like, and it's huge, so you have to get your arms, they normally put glue on their arms so it doesn't slide, and like they're trying to reach as far forward, their back is so flexed it's ridiculous, and then to pick this up they've had to just contort their body in multiple ways. And now you can't say to someone that's not a right thing to do, because they've managed to pick up a certain amount of weight and not get injured doing it. That's because they've trained their body to be able to do these sort of positions. They're not training their body to necessarily isolate their hamstrings. Like, so for instance, with me, like when I do Romanian deadlifts, I like to get into extension. So I pull my shoulders essentially back and down, and I get my lower back into a little bit of extension, so I lengthen my hamstrings. So when I'm doing them with it, I get such a good connection compared to if I had my shoulders forward and down, I could still get a similar sort of connection, but it would take me much further down towards the floor for me to get that same stretch. So I know where the use case is for me, because I've experimented with these positions. And when I think about the whole spinal flexion kind of movement in a way, it's great, but I think there's a time and a place for the person to know where they are in their journey and when to start experimenting with spinal flexion. And the only reason I say that is because a lot of the time, if I was to imagine a completely spaghetti like back, just picking something up off the floor, probably not going to be the best position to put it into. Not necessarily like you're not meant to do it like that, but their body probably isn't primed and prepped for that. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you pick something up the floor, you don't even need to worry about it normally. And that'll be where you'll do your back in, because it's a position you're not exposed yourself to. So if we can expose ourselves to these different sort of extreme positions, but steadily over time, we're going to build up the ability to be able to access those positions on demand.
Yeah, spot on. I think it's like, to make it clear for the listeners, the trend that needs to die is the polarization on social media and absolute statements, not spinal flexion. Spinal flexion is just a good example of that, that people, it's become such a partisan argument, like team neutral spine versus team flexion. And like Rob says, there are situations where you need to be, to have a good enough understanding to apply each for your intended outcome. But the one thing that is good about the team spinal flexion is that it raises an interesting discussion around, why do we ever brace? Like, why has that become a thing? Why is bracing in neutral so prevalent in fitness textbooks, manuals, and courses? And in my mind, it's almost like knees over toes and squatting below parallel, in that at some point in time, somebody arbitrarily said, if your spine changes angle during movement, it's dangerous. And I don't think that is really grounded in evidence. As Rob says there, you've got strong men squatting with Atlas stones and incredibly flexed spines. You've got rugby players running into people with a flexed spine and exploding into extension on contact. So the key part of what Rob said there is that you've got to start where you're at and then progressively build up. But there are no absolutely wrong positions that we can get our body into. You can get into huge amounts of spinal flexion, provided the load is low enough, it'll be safe. And then if you build up from that point, then you're probably going to end up in a really good place because you're strong through the whole range. And I think the principle here is if you train more movements or train more movement, full stop, then you'll be stronger when you're still. But if you train stillness, the opposite is not true. So if you only train with a neutral spine, you're probably not going to be that strong in flexion, extension, and side bending and rotating. But if you train all six of those positions, you probably will be stronger in a neutral spine. You might not be as strong as the person who only trains it because there's an opportunity cost. But from a GPP point of view, if you're just somebody looking to be generally fitter and stronger, your granddad looking to pick up your grandchildren's toys, then I think having the movement option is probably more valuable to you than just maximum tensile strength in one situation.
Yeah, and I think as well, when I think about when we're talking about social media there, and there's something going around in like a certain area of the social media sphere of like the ego lifting games. And for me, I love that. That's really cool. I think they're like, people are doing some of the most outlandish things with strength. And I'm just and for me, I think it's, you know, like why people used to look at strongman, right? You used to go to a circus and watch them in a circus to display the strength. And now we have the circus in our hands. So it's like, why not like display this strength? And this is something that I really enjoyed about old time strength. And I do get really annoyed at myself that I kind of put it on the little side bend, on the bench for a little bit. Yeah, the back burner. But it's like, it's a way to like display strength and use strength rather than necessarily always building it, because it's like building strength is fun. I love it because it's you know, constantly trying to better yourself, but there's times and place to actually utilize that strength and kind of have fun with it. And I think old time strength really has, and when I talk about old time strength, it's basically doing a lot of like lifts with say one hand. And that's basically a lot of this stuff. And if you imagine going to like a circus back in the day where they was in those leotards doing like these crazy things, and you're just like, that's what some of social media is really good for, seeing what some of these people can do and showing what the body is resilient against. It's like on social media, if you follow someone, Atlas Power Strugged or like Deadliest Lift, and you see some of the crazy things that they lift and like the positions, and like Atlas Power Strugged is like, he's got a really decent, like, muscular body at the moment. And he's like, he does like Jefferson deadlifts. So, I mean, severely spinally flexed. And the traps he's got on him are fucking jacked. Mm-hmm. He trains in a car park and just like does his thing. And it's like, he just shows the body can do these things. And he's also built himself up over time to be able to get used to this. And it's like, and this has come from experience when I had a bit of a layoff from some of the old time strength, and I went back and did some Jefferson deadlifts. So a severely rounded back, and I got myself up to 140. And it was fine. I did them, but I definitely felt it the day after, not in a positive way. And I was like, okay, I pushed too far. So that's my ego, which took over there. But because I knew it was safe, it was safe, but it wasn't necessarily safe at 140. I probably should have stopped at 100, because that, for me, where I was at, was not quite ready to go for 140. But yeah, so I think we've finished here, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. One thing I want to say, though, is that you said that it's the old time strength is just to impress people and to display strength, but you can definitely use that to build strength as if you do 100%. It progressively. Yeah, it's probably the theme of social media is that it's very performative, I guess, is the point you're trying to make there, which is very true. And I think that's just human nature. We've just got more opportunity to do it. And
more people to see. That's the thing. We have access to more and more people now doing these amazing things. And that is the thing. It's like, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time, because we're seeing what is achievable. So then we're actually saying, fuck, like, I can do more. But then at the same time, it's like, how do you actually get to that? And you haven't necessarily seen the journey that they've had to do to get to where they are. You try what they're doing and your body's not ready for that. That's where the problems come. And that this is where it is a positive. But I think once you start to understand the nuance, or you hire a coach and talk to them about how you could essentially achieve that, it's great. So,
yeah.
Now, this next one, I loved it. The rebuild. So a trend that needs to die is hashtagging everything with the rebuild. Now, I can personally say I have done this myself. I have been the rebuild king in the past. And I've justified it to myself, because it's like I looked back at previous achievements and said that when I was at that moment in my life, this is where everything was just right, and this was where it was perfect. And a lot of the time, from my sense, it's always been like a body composition state. And it's always been like when I've been a certain type of leanness, it's like the strength side of stuff, I've kind of a little bit towards that, but it's nearly always been towards the rebuild of trying to build my body back to like this lean, like 92 kilo self, which I remember I used to be. And I feel whenever I see it now, it's not that it's pathetic, but I see it as how I used to be, of not being happy with where I am now. And justifying that now I'm not in a good place, which then puts a negative spin on who you are as a person right now. Not saying that you don't need to change, and it's not saying that you don't want to look back on previous endeavors as motivation. But something that I've done, because when I was looking back at previous pictures of myself, I had to understand what was my life like at that moment. So when I look back, I justify around the 2017, 2018 time when we opened up WIT, and like the type of physique that I kind of had at that time. I didn't have kids. It was a lot freer. Like, I had a focus on my body looking a certain way. And I look at everything I was able to do there, and I think that was how I want to be. But I don't take into consideration how different my life is now. And that's not now justifying me being lazy and not being able to say achieve that, but it's just saying there are other priorities for me. And if I want to look like that, what am I having to give up to get to that? And do I really want to? Because at what cost does that? What cost does those abs come at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot in there to unpack. I think the phrase the rebuild just gets chucked around, and I think the reading between the lines is basically, don't read too much into what I'm doing now because I used to be amazing. That's basically the subtext. So if I'm not in the shape I used to be in, or if I'm not lifting the weights I used to lift, you know, just asterisk, caveat, by the way, I used to be fucking strong, or I used to be fucking ripped. That's what you need to know from, whereas this session might not be that impressive for you, but back in the day, fucking, like, you should have seen it.
It's like the old geezer in the gym. Oh, back then I used to be able to do that. It's like, all right, yeah, fine. That was you then. This is not now.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, kind of what you said there is that the behind the scenes of that is not being accepting of where you currently are. And that the insinuation is kind of that you're only all right, or you're only worthy if you are your peak version of yourself in whatever realm we're discussing. So it could be body composition, it could be strength, it could be fitness. You could have had an amazing 5K run back in the day. And if you're attaching your personal value to that, and you think of yourself as, no good because you're not at that peak moment in your life in all areas, and then that's not a great mindset or message to have. And I think things like CrossFit make it difficult, because at some point in your life, it's very unlikely that you're peaking in all areas of CrossFit at the same time. So if you used to be an incredible runner, you're probably not hitting the same 5K times as you used to when you were 10 kilos lighter and squatting half as much, because it's the game of generalism rather than specialism. But equally, lifestyle is a huge part of it. I remember we talked about it with Courtney when she came on, that people hang on to their former glories rather than just say, like, yeah, where I am now is pretty cool. Like, it's not the best I've ever been, but still pretty good, and I'm moving forward, so that's all you can really ask for. And yeah, it's just a funny trend you see a lot of people do, and it's not a criticism, it's just an observation that I think the individual posting would probably benefit as well if they didn't view it as a rebuild of just trying to get back to where they were. And you made a good point before we started recording. If you're always just trying to get back to where you were, you might actually be limiting your progress, because you might be able to go beyond it if you were open-minded to think that, you know, that wasn't the ceiling of your potential. There is actual room to grow beyond that. So let's put the rebuild in the bin and just say this is what your training's like at the moment, and it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, one of the, since like this, so my current dieting phase has actually been probably one of the best ones I've had so far, purely because when I specialized to lift the most amount of weight possible, I got myself up to 110 kilos. And so I actively did that, sit in my weight class and just do a job. And I did that. Now, I've since the start of the year been dieting on and off, like here and there, but not giving myself too much of a time frame. I'm not doing any comparisons. I didn't stay as right. This is now like my rebuild, or as I've called it, for the shred in the shed. Like, you know, I've given it a thing. I've given it a whole, like, if I'm not doing it, and then I'm not worthy. It's like this time I've just been tracking my calories most of the time, doing most of the things that I should be doing to get myself to a better composition. And I'm currently sitting around 98, 99 at the moment, with a goal to get to around 95, 96. And I haven't set myself a date. I've just said I want to ideally achieve it at some point this year. So I'll give myself roughly, it's been 6 months. And in that time, I kind of had a hiatus from dieting while I was focusing on weightlifting, because I realized dieting and trying to get stronger weightlifting wasn't conducive of each other. And this time, you know, I've now got some other goals that are a bit more performance related. So again, dieting isn't necessarily right at the forefront of my mind, but maybe being in a bit of a lighter body weight and stuff like that might actually make things a little bit easier. With a powerlifting competition coming up at the end of the year, I'm not getting any like comparisons, because I've moved to high bar and sumo deadlift. So again, I've cut out the comparison there. So if anything, I'm kind of cheating myself, so I don't have to compare. But also, I'll be at a lighter body weight. And even if I was doing the other movements still, I couldn't compare, because I'd be like 10 to 15 kilos less. And I didn't say it in the point when I was talking about before, but like, when I looked back at some of my old photos, I realized that I only looked good. So I was only braced. I took a photo of myself like a couple months back, and I took a good photo, then I took a relaxed photo straight after, because it's, you could trick yourself into thinking like the, because I, one of the photos that I compare myself to was in a changing room with down lighting, and you know how good that stuff looks. And you know, I looked good. I was like, God damn, this is what I'm trying to work towards. And it's like, when I think if that's what I look like, I didn't. Like, yeah. I'm tricking myself. Yeah. It's like, and as well, like when I look back at my, like from my bodybuilding shows, it's like, I felt like shit. Like, I felt terrible. I might have looked in shape, but I felt terrible. And the rebound afterwards was ridiculous. I went from 85 to 95. I think it was 95 or 98 in the space of a week, because I just ate every. So then that was not a healthy place to be. So it's like, yes, maybe I had the picture by the pool or this and that, but it's like, I wasn't in a good place. And I feel recently when I took that photo and then I took a relaxed photo, it's good for me to look back on, because then I can see the true reflection of who I am, and to not feel so bad about who I am right now. And this is where the rebuild, as you kind of mentioned there, is that just meaning that we're not worthy of our current selves, and that we have to become comfortable with who we are to know that we, if we want to progress, that we've got a new goal to progress to, rather than focusing on what we used to be. And it's the former glories, which we've kind of now mentioned a few times, but it's the great achievements, and you should look back at them. You should be proud of them. You should be proud of these achievements because you've worked hard for them. But just like any goal, you specialize to achieve that goal. And just like we always talk about, you can't be a specialist all the time unless that's exactly what you are and you're not good at everything else. But if you want to be good at everything, you're going to have periods of focusing on one thing, then the next thing. Like, I personally don't ever expect to deadlift 300 kilos again. I really don't. But that's because I know at that moment in my life, right before I had my second kid, I put the most amount of weight on I could, done only powerlifting, dropped all my cardio, and literally just done the one goal and achieved it. So how can I expect now to be, say, 15 kilos lighter with that and to hit the same number? Like, I don't expect that. And it doesn't make me any less of a person.
Exactly. That's the key point, is that you're still very, very, very strong, even though you might not be able to. I think that's the binary nature of people's opinion of themselves, is that if I'm not at my absolute best, I'm not X quality. So if I'm not the leanest I've ever been, I'm not lean. If I'm not the strongest I've ever been, I'm not strong. They're absolutely not true. You can be great and plenty good enough, even if you're not the most you've ever been. And I think that's what I'd like people to take away from it.
So the next one, a little bit more of a one in jest. But so obviously, like, they all kind of link to social media, don't they, really? But the cardio reels. So, you know, I think there's, for me, again, I'm culprit some of this. I've done this before. And like, it wasn't until I think I spoke to like Zach George, and he come down to WIT one time. And so I used to record the whole workout and then splice it and everything. And he come down, and after the workout, he said, "Can you film me doing the movements again?" And I was just like, "What? You're not filming the workout?" Huh? And then I realized, I was like, fuck, what am I doing? Why am I filming a 40-minute EMOM? Just, I don't need to. No one wants to see that. I don't need to time lapse it. I don't need to. Just if you're going to do a cardio reel to kind of add some value to someone by maybe giving them a workout of some sort, or maybe giving them some thoughts on how to approach something or whatever, then there's value in that. But you don't need to record the whole thing. So save your phone battery, save your phone memory, because sometimes you forget about those videos and they take up a lot of memory.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of caveats around this one, like Rob said, that if you're conveying some useful information, there's a good caption or something like that that makes it relevant or useful or entertaining, then for sure having some cardio in your reel is good. But the thing I take issue with is somebody's doing just a zone 2 session, like they're just literally sat on a C2 bike for 30, 60, 90 minutes. And that's the only shot of the whole reel. They might change angles or something, but I mean, what have we come to where that's perceived as entertainment? Who's actually watching the entirety of that reel? So it's just, I think I understand that for a lot of people, it's very important to maintain consistency in posting. They have to put something up every single day. But yeah, maybe not on your zone 2 day to just do this, like the most boring movement at lowest intensity you ever do for 90 seconds.
Yeah.
We can hear songs elsewhere. Like,
So as you said, a bit of a light in jest, but yeah, if you're going to do your cardio reels, maybe let's add some value there and maybe talk a little bit about zone 2. And speaking of zone 2, you did a good episode with Upside Strength. So if you want to listen to all about zone 2, check back into our library and check out that episode. It was a really good one. So last but not least is calorie justifications and punishments. Now, this one actually needed a bit of clarity given to me, because kind of when I first thought about calorie justification and punishments, for me, I felt that a lot of the time when I work out, I create this deficit of some sort. And that then if I've, say, done a massive cardio workout, so like been out on a bike ride or a run or something like that, and I've, say, burnt 1,000 calories, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a pizza. I've got the calories. I've got the time. I feel good. I enjoy food that isn't necessarily going to be conducive of a healthy body, but it gives me a really positive mindset afterwards if I feel good about myself. So when I thought of it like that, I was like, well, there's nothing wrong with that. However, you actually reframed the discussion. So would you like to dive a bit more into that?
Yeah, so the thing that I think needs to die is more the punishment side of things, where somebody might have a muffin for breakfast instead of the nutritious breakfast that they had planned, or they might go out for drinks one night and just have a bunch of beers instead of dinner. And they'll try to, in air quotes, pay that off by doing an extra session. And I think that's a double negative in that you're now removing nutrients from your daily diet, and then you're adding a big stressor in an extra session. So if your week is well calibrated, you should be getting everything you need from your food, and your training should be providing a good level of stimulus to get adaptation towards your goals. And you're now taking a negative step in both directions. Like for me, this is obviously not a blanket statement for all people in all situations, but if you have consumed a bunch of junk calories which aren't giving you anything, I think you'd be better off having a nutritious meal and going over your calories rather than just starving yourself from, say, the protein, the micronutrients that are actually good for you, and adding an extra stress from a high intensity session to try and balance it out is the phrase that I think I take issues with. Just if you want to have that food, you can build it in and make it work. But viewing it as something that needs to be atoned for, I think, is the unhealthy attitude here, where it's almost like you're putting it in a separate category where it's naughty, so you have to pay the price for it. Whereas actually all of it can be built in. If you know you want that sort of stuff, just find a way to make it work and don't malnourish yourself and then add loads of junk volume to your training as well, which is actually going to compromise the more beneficial, useful and constructive training that should be in your program.
Yeah, and I think what I like about this point is when we talk about like poor quality food in general, that is a stressor on the body in itself. Like there's lots of talk about how, you know, our bodies aren't necessarily able to digest some of these foods and whatever, right? Now that's going into a different discussion which I'm not qualified to talk about. However, what I do see is that if you're adding these poor quality foods in, and as you said there, adding in then high intensity work or adding in a more of a stressor to burn that off. If anyone's seen on YouTube the challenge of like eat 10,000 and burn 10,000, right? How much harder it is to burn 10,000 calories than it is to eat 10. I want to kind of do the challenge because it's an interesting one for me because I can eat very easily. But like when I see that, I'm like, to burn 10,000 calories, the amount of stress you have to put on your body to do that compared to just eating it, it's your relationship towards food. And I'd say this from an emotional like standpoint. Like I have not a great relationship with food. Like I really enjoy food and I enjoy to overeat, and you know, I could definitely be better. But what I don't do is then punish myself with workouts, as like you mentioned there, because for me it's like I'm going to train anyway, and if I'm then deciding to then say fuel up post session with maybe a pizza rather than some like chicken and rice and broccoli, because that would be more of a micronutrient dense meal with protein and so forth, and it is what it is. I don't then dwell on it and I kind of move on. And that's also something where recently I feel my relationship towards food has got better, because I'm not associating, back to like the point before, my self-worth with like that one meal. And that if that one meal was not necessarily conducive on my diet, doesn't then mean the rest of the day or the rest of the week or anything is out the pot. And that's it's the all or nothing mindset. And I think that's the where we really come into it, with the punishing ourselves with exercise. It's like, that's not what exercise is for. Exercise isn't there to punish you. We've already got stressful lives as it is, as we spoke about with Vintas when you come on. Like is like for us, it's like stress on the body is going to happen anyway. We don't need to add more stresses, even if it's mental stress of like dwelling on the fact that you've eaten shit. Just like, oh fuck, I shouldn't have done that. Da, 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 da. And it's like, just chill, move on, crack on with the next one, stick with your training, recover well, eat well, and do your thing.
Yeah, 100%. That's it, mate.
So, really enjoyed that. So just as a very quick recap for you guys, as a reminder, so we obviously spoke initially at the start, our first trend that needed to die, it's kind of like the polarization of like movement on social media. So we use spinal flexion as our example of being able to like be able to flex the spine or to be able to stay in a neutral spine and like kind of balancing that. The second one was obviously the rebuild, where we discuss about you don't need to have your self-worth based on a former self compared to your current self. You are a beautiful individual butterfly and you are where you are right now, and that's exactly where you need to be. You can be progressing forward, but don't stress about it. Chill. The second one, we don't need to use all your phone memory up with cardio reels. You know, maybe just do quick highlights, as I learned the quick way afterwards from Zach George himself. And lastly, the calorie justifications. Stop punishing yourself with training because you want to eat shit. Train hard because you need to train hard, and that's because what your program's calling for. So, as always, thank you very much for listening. We would love it if you did enjoy this episode for you to share it on your social medias. Since we talk about how much we don't like it, but we'd love for you to share it on social media.
There's some good stuff on there. Less of the hate, more than I can know.
Exactly. So we really do appreciate you tuning in each week. Don't forget to tag us on Instagram at lunge.lift. You know, you can also find us on YouTube. Subscribe. We're gradually, slowly building, but it's good. You know, once you're over on YouTube, subscribe, like the video, share the video, do all the good stuff. If you're on Apple Podcasts, leave a nice review. We'd love that. If you're on Spotify, a couple of 5 stars. And if you really want to help support the podcast, you know, make sure you keep sharing the episodes. That's how we're growing. So if you want to also get some extra goodies, you can head over to wit-fitness.com for all your WIT kit and use code LL15 and get yourself 15% off your purchase. And if you want some blood flow restriction apparel, you can head over to Hytro and use the code LL20 for 20% off your blood flow restriction apparel. So as always, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.